All right, good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So I know it's already after Tu B'Shvat, a bit anticlimactic, but you'll see this piece that I want to show you by Rav Moshe. I think is incredibly beautiful. It's written regarding Tu B'Shvat, but I think at the end of the day, you will find that the meaning and impact of it really transcends. So he writes over here as follows. I'm in number 9 on the sheets that I gave you on Monday. The parashas B'Shalach Tu B'Shvat, Amarti Tam Ala Simcha Be'etzem. If you remember again, the fundamental shaila when it comes to Tu B'Shvat, what was the fundamental shaila, fundamental question we had? What's the simcha? Right? So right after, at the end of the day, we know it's a significant day, right? What's the nature of the significance? Why is it significant? Good. Rosh Hashanah Le'Ilanos, meaning what? What's the impact of Rosh Hashanah Le'Ilanos? Good, Meiser, cohort for Meiser, right? Creates ultimately, again, the groupings for Meiser Ha'ilan, for Peros Ha'ilan. Good, so halachically significant, but at the end of the day, why an element of Simcha? So Rav Moshe addresses this. He has two questions. He says, number one, why is there historical Simcha? Why is there historical Simcha? So remember, going back, we already saw, remember, how does the Simcha of Tu B'Shvat manifest itself? Two ways. Number one, no Tachanu. Number two, no what? No fast days. Right? Remember again, we saw the Mordechai Bahab falls out on Tu B'Shvat, no Bahab on Tu B'Shvat. Good. So, even if you want to say that historically there was a Simcha on Tu B'Shvat, maybe because it was associated with Meirsus, remember again, it also represents the shifting or the changing of an agricultural season. I could hear that. But the truth is, contemporarily, says Rav Moshe, where's the Simcha from? Why is there an element of Simcha? Look what he writes. This is really incredibly beautiful. As we said, we don't tithe from one year's crop on another year's crop. Therefore, Tu B'Shvat creates the cohort, creates the new year. Any crops that came before, or fruit that comes before Tu B'Shvat, is last year's cohort. Post Tu B'Shvat, this year's cohort. But again, why the Simcha? So look what he writes. Shehine Yadua, I'm on the right hand paragraph, about 4 lines down. Shehine Yadua Sheshvat, excuse me, Sheshevet Levi Lo Nata Nachala. Remember again, Shevet Levi has no portion in Eretz Yisrael. V'chol Yisrael lachu nachalasam. Now, Ramosha says something fascinating. He says, did Shevet Levi have a nachala? Think about this for just a moment. Did Shevet Levi have a portion? I'm sorry? So right, so they had, so this is interesting, right? So the Levim had Ari Miklat, but were those actually the tribal portions? I'll tell you, for example, what happens if you sell land in your tribal portion in Eretz Yisrael? What happens? It returns. When does it return? Yovo, right? Remember again, in Eretz Yisrael, essentially, there's really no such thing. Most real estate transactions are not sales, they're long-term leases, right? Being that again, you can't buy land in perpetuity because the clock resets for tribal properties. Again, there are certain exceptions to this, not important for right now. So even the Ari Miklat of the Levium, right? Those are places that the Levium were given to live. Do they have actual title to that land? B'pashtos not. So if I were to ask you again, does Levi have a nachala? Do they have a portion? What would you say? So normally we're accustomed to saying, no, I would have agreed with that until I saw Rav Moshe. So Rav Moshe says, no, every Shevet has a nachala. Every Shevet has a nachala, including Levi. Alright, so what's Levi's nachala? Whatever it was, but it was given to the other Shvatim. So the nachala, excuse me, that would have belonged to Shevet Levi ultimately becomes the property of the other Shvatim. Now, give me a proof to Rav Moshe's position. Why is that interesting? We don't normally think that way, but why does it make a lot of sense after he says it? Levi did have a portion, but that subsequently, quote unquote, lost it and it was given to the rest of the Shvatim. Levi doesn't have a portion. Why? Yes? Oh, interesting. Good. Remember, again, originally it was a Shevet Yosef one. Good. What else? Why doesn't Levi have a portion?
No, it's not their job.
It's not their job. What's their job? Good. Their job is to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. They are supposed to be occupied fully and totally with spiritual needs, not agriculture, therefore no nachala. Was that originally their job? No. Whose job was that? Whose job? Whose job? Whose job? The Bechorim. Remember again, firstborns. right? Not necessarily Shevet Reuven, not necessarily Shevet Reuven, firstborns, right? Firstborns were to be the Levium, the Kohanim, that was their job. So think about this just a moment. Essentially, every Shevet would produce their quote-unquote own Kohanim and Levium, for lack of a better term. And every Shevet, your firstborns, somehow would be the ones who would serve in the Beis HaMikdash, which meant that in that model, what was Shevet Levi's job? Or what would have been Shevet Levi's job? Right, whatever it was, they would have done something. They would have done something. And therefore, they would have had a Nachala. So Rav Moshe really makes an amazing observation. He says, Levi had a Nachala. Levi did have, in the original Korach, in the original plan, before, remember again, when does this shift take place between the Bechorim and Shevet Levi? Chayte Ego, excellent. Right, sin of the golden calf is when the shift takes place. So Rav Moshe posits something amazing. In the original plan, Levi had a Nachala. Levi had a portion. When then the responsibilities are redistributed, and ultimately again, the Bechorim, quote-unquote, we'll call it, lose the Kahuna, and Kahuna is given to Shevet Levi, the portion of Levi is removed from Levi, and what happens to it? Apparently it's distributed amongst the rest of the Shvatim. This is Rav Moshe's idea. Now again, I don't know if Rav Moshe is quoting this idea from an earlier source, or this is just his idea. It's really quite a fascinating way to look at it. Now watch this. So Levi doesn't get a portion, but the portion that was originally to be theirs was given to the rest of Klal Yisrael. So now look what Rav Moshe says. When we give Trumas and Maestros, so very often, how do we look at Trumas and Maestros? What would you group it under? What umbrella is it under? Chesed, or, more specifically, Tzedakah. Says Rav Moshe, Trumas and Maestros is not Tzedakah. He says, rather, view it instead as rent. As rent. Rent for what? Rent for what? For taking their land. Right, I'm sitting on a portion of land that should have belonged to Shevet Levi. Levi doesn't have their portion because, again, they're serving in the Beis HaMikdash, but it's their land. It's their Nachala. So when I give Chumas and Maestros, I'm paying my rent for the land. Right, I'm paying my rent to them. So it's not tzedakah. It's not some kind of dramatic act of kindness or magnificent generosity. I'm paying rent for land that technically belongs to someone else that I am getting benefit from. But here's the difference, right? What happens normally with your rent? Who do you pay your rent to? Who do you pay rent to? Right, the owner, the landlord. Right, and what happens if you don't pay your rent? You're kicked out. So interestingly enough, as much as Rav Moshe says that Trumas and Maestros is like rent, there's only one problem. First of all, there's no particular land. Remember again, one of the rights I have as a farmer is what's called Tovas Hana'a of Trumas and Maestros. Tovas Hana'a means I have the right to choose what? Who I give it to. That's my right. So for example, let's say again, in my family, so Ami Yisrael, my mother's whole side are Kohanim, I could choose to give it to my cousins and my uncles if I want to. That's my right to do that. So on one hand, I could choose who I give it to. No one has the right, remember again, no Kohen or Levi has the right to knock on my door and say, give me my Trumas and Maestros. No one has the right, because I could say, I have an obligation to give it to Kohen Levi, I don't have an obligation to give it to you. I want to give it to him, I want to give it to someone else, I want to give it to, or I, that's my choice. And what happens if you don't give Trumas and Maestros? Do you get evicted from your land? No. So on one hand, as much as we're saying that Trumas and Maestros are not tzedakah, it's not a chesed, but instead Rav Moshe says, view it like rent. You are occupying land that belongs to the Levim, that belongs to Shevet Levi. Because the Baruch Hu gave it to us, and he says, okay, if you're going to live on the land, you're going to live off the land, you should pay the rent, pay Trumas and Maestros. But unlike rent, where there's someone defined you have to pay it to, someone who's going to demand it of you, and if you don't pay it, you'll get evicted. Trumas and Maestros are not like that. You could choose who you give it to, when you give it to, and the truth is, if you never end up paying it, no one's going to evict you from your land. Watch this. Therefore, historically, some people were just derelict, right? They were derelict in their responsibility to go ahead and give Maestros. For Furthermore, again, what could happen, even if a person was going to give their trumas and maestros? Sometimes people would delay giving their trumas and maestros. Why would you delay? What did Ramosh say? Why would you delay? Why? Because you know what's going to happen next. You remember again, trumas and maestros could be significant. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm willing essentially to give trumas and maestros, but I want to give it like a year behind. So let's say now it's year one. I'm going to wait till I get year two crop, and then I'll give year one trumas and maestros, right? This way, again, I know that I'm okay, I'm settled, and then I'll give out to the kohen and levi what belongs to him. However, you know, in general, when people delay charitable giving until they know they have enough for themselves, what generally happens? They don't give. Why? It's never enough, right? Do you ever have real security, right? Did you really ever have enough? So if this person begins saying, you know what, I'll give year one trumas and maestros when year two crop comes in. But now I have year two crop, but I don't know what year three is going to be. They're predicting less rain. Who knows what's going to be? So wait till year three. And you see how this goes on and on and on until a person is derelict in their responsibilities to give their trumas and maestros. Ad shepitom yavo idom. Until a certain point in time comes where I'm so delayed and so behind to give my trumas and maestros, I lose track of what it is that I'm supposed to do, and I end up missing out on my responsibilities. Therefore, what does the Torah say? Tzivsa Torah, shein ma'asim mishal shas. Listen to this. Kadosh Baruch, this is incredible. So Chazal came along and they said, we're going to prevent you from doing this. We're going to prevent you from delaying paying your trumas and maestros. How do Chazal prevent us from delaying? How do they prevent us? That you can't tithe 1 year's produce from the next. So remember again, what would be the most tempting model of tithing? The most tempting model, right? If we want a financially secure model of trumas and maestros, how would you do it? How would you do it? You have year one produce. Do you tithe year one produce? No. What do? Wait for year two. Then when year two comes, either go ahead and let's say tithe from year two, go ahead and give year two produce for year one. Chazal came and said, you can't do that. You cannot tithe produce from 1 year to the next. By saying that, what did they by definition ensure? That what? That people will give trumas and maestros in a timely fashion. Now, of course, could someone say, I'm not giving at all? Sure. You're right, you can't force a person to give. Someone might say that. But at least for those who are being more heter, you know, who are justifying, of course I'm going to give. I'm just going to give a little bit later. I'm just going to wait a little bit. I'm just going to wait till year number two, a little bit more money in the bank, a little bit more produce in the silos, and then I'll give. Chazal said, nope, can't do it. Can't do it. Can only tithe year one produce from year one produce. Can't give year two produce as tithes for year one produce. By doing that, Chazal, by definition, forced the farmer, so to speak, to give his trumas and maestros in what? In a timely fashion. So this is very interesting. What doesn't it explain? What doesn't it explain? Remember, what was our question? I'm sorry? Rent. Hold on. Doesn't explain simcha. Right? Simcha. So, right? So okay, I got it. Meaning, the system is ingenious. It makes sense. It ensures that everyone gives their trumas and maestros in a timely fashion. But why does this result in a sense of simcha? Look at Rav Moshe writes, and this is so beautiful. V'zeu atam. Last few lines in the right-hand paragraph. V'zeu atam. D'yesh Rosh Hashanah l'din maestros. U'be'ilanos hu yom tov tu b'shvat. Shu simcha gidola. Shebazeh na'ase hates chalokim shalo mamish. If you're living in the apartment, when does the apartment really become yours? When? When you pay your rent. Right? Up until you pay your rent, what there's always a possibility that what? Right? If you don't pay your rent, what could happen? The landlord evicts you. Once you pay your rent, the domicile, the apartment is yours. Says Rav Moshe, something so beautiful. If you accept the premise that my land really belongs to Shevet Levi, or some portion of my land really belongs to Shevet Levi, and the way I'm entitled to use it is how? Pay rent. What's rent? What's the rent called? Trumas and maestros. When does the land then really become yours? When does it become yours? When you pay your trumas and maestros. So Rav Moshe posits something so beautiful. He says, by Tu Bishvat, Tu Bishvat was the day where people paid up their trumas and maestros. Because they paid up their trumas and maestros, therefore what? The land really became theirs. What's the simcha of Tu B'Shvat? The simcha of Tu B'Shvat is that the land is really mine now. Beforehand, I was living on it. Beforehand, I was utilizing it. Was I the owner? Was I the owner? No, because I didn't pay the rent. You're really only the owner once you pay the rent on the property. So Moshe posits such a beautiful and novel idea that the simcha of Tu B'Shvat is that once I pay my chumas and maestras, I've paid my rent, now the land really becomes mine. So the Moshe advances a dramatic idea, which is it's only once you pay for something that it truly becomes yours. Look how he expands on this. Take a look on the left-hand paragraph. V'hine, gam bizman hazeh. So the Moshe says this is not just a historical reality, but this is a contemporary truth as well. Ki gam bizman hazeh, tzarech ha'adam leida, ki be'etzem nivra olam l'chol b'nei adam. Listen to how beautiful this is. The world was created for everyone. Right? Hashem created the world for everyone. V'yesh l'chol echad chilek shava be'etzem. Ach kasher zach. So watch this. So remember, he's using the same model. Remember again, does Shevet Levi have a portion? Did Shevet Levi have a portion in Eretz Yisrael?
Yeah.
Yes. What happens as a result of new responsibilities? Their chilek was taken by others. So because their chilek was taken by others, therefore the others being the rest of the Shvatim, have an obligation to pay them rent. That rent comes in the form of Trumas and Maestras. Therefore, again, the property only belongs to the rest of the Shvatim when they pay their rent. The Simcha of Tu B'Shvat is that by the time Tu B'Shvat rolled around, you paid out your Trumas and Maestras, solidifying your ownership over your land. And when you solidify your ownership over Eretz Yisrael, ultimately, again, incredible Simcha. Says Rav Moshe, let's apply this concept a bit more globally. The world, right? The world. Think about this in just a moment. So Eretz Yisrael, in the original form, was supposed to be divided how? How? How many ways? How many ways? Let's call it 13 ways, right? Let's accept Ephraim and Asher are two different Shvatim, right? Levi, so it was supposed to be split 13 ways. Instead, it was only split 12 ways. Shevet Levi doesn't get a portion. Moshe, think about this on a global level. If you think about the way the world works, everyone should have a portion. Whatever there's, I don't know how many, however many human beings are in the world. There's 1 billion people in the world? I don't know how many people there are in the world. 7 billion. Good. Oh, it's only off by a little bit. Right? 7 billion people in the world. So what happens? So the world should be split up into 7 billion pieces. Everybody should have their equal chelik. Everybody should have their equal amount. Okay? Ach kasher, I'm in left-hand paragraph, third line down. Ach kasher zacha echad me'ezatam. Ve'achad nischayiv me'ezatam. Nosin HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'zok egam chilek ha'mischayiv. But for reasons sometimes unknown to us, Hashem gives some people more and some people less. Right? So remember, this is a fascinating way just to look at the world. In the perfect model, everyone has an equal chelek, right? Everyone has a portion. What do they call this today? Everybody has a portion? Communism, right? So you have to understand something. Communism doesn't come from a bad place, right? It doesn't come from a bad place. It's actually a very logical idea everybody should have. Why should some have a lot, some have a little? Let's make sure everybody has. It doesn't work for a variety of different levels because people have an innate drive to be successful. And people will work harder if what? If what? If they know they can get more. If I work hard, but I still get the same amount as someone who works less hard, so then what's the impetus? What's the motivation to work for work's sake? It's not how people work. In any event, but if you think about it from a model perspective, because we're all created 7 billion people, the world should be divided up 7 billion individual equal pieces. But yet, b'metzius, that's not how the world works, right? In the world, some have, some do not. Some have more, some have less. Look what Rav Moshe says. So listen to this idea. Let's say I am privileged to be one of those people who has more. Who has more. What is the nature of what I have? What's the nature of it? It's part of someone else's. You see, remember again, just like in Eretz Yisrael, right? If I'm in Shevet Yehuda, I know part of my land is not really Yehuda land. Part of my land is redistributed Levi land. And therefore, again, I have to go out and pay the Levium the rent in the form of Chumas and Maestras. If I have more in this world, if I have more, that more, technically speaking, came from a portion that belonged to someone else. But I didn't take it from them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose, for whatever the reason, to redistribute the wealth. redistribute throughout. So therefore, if I have more, that means that's a portion that on a technical level could have been someone else's, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu deemed fit to give to me. The Kutra of Moshe says, this is incredible. Vimkein hu be'esem eino shalom. And therefore it turns out that in essence, this is not my... See, this concept is fascinating because very often we're taught differently. Right? The Moshe is saying something that when you say it, it actually sounds very strange. Because normally how are we conditioned to think? What I have is mine, what you have is yours. And what I have doesn't impact you, and what you have doesn't impact me. You know, sometimes people view the world as like a big pie. Right? So if I get a bigger piece, there's less for you. It's not true. Right? In Judaism, we believe you have your pie, I have my pie. You should, in Meretz Hashem, get all of your pie. I should be zochet to have all of my pie. Everybody should have their pie. And Shalom al Yisrael. Moshe says, that's true. That's still true. But on almost like a global hashkafic level, it should be, the way the world should work, you would think is everyone gets equal. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu has different cheshbonos, and therefore, some get more, some get less. If I have more, that means some of what I have, technically speaking, could have been the portion of someone else. Therefore, it turns out that if I am privileged to have more in this world, some of that more that I possess is not what? Is not mine. Is not mine. Therefore, look what he writes. Ve'im kein be'etzmu eino shalo. Ach im yekayim hatenoim shehisni mo Hakadosh Baruch Hu sheyitein staka laniim shelaka chelkam yezake bechelko viyase shalom mamish. This is beautiful. So how do you make the excess you have yours? How do you make the surplus you have yours? How do you do that? How do you do that? One word, right? Or what's the word we used before? Rent. It's the rent idea, right? How do you make the apartment yours? It's rent. So the rent agriculturally was Truma Semaisrus. The rent for me is tzedakah. Go ahead.
Are we saying that the difference is that what you have is really someone else's, and you just got lucky and they did something that they don't deserve their thing, and you got their extra $10? Or is there something else by saying, like, this is how I thought the world works, and your zofa, don't worry about anyone else, your zofa can actually $10.
Yeah, so I thought like you also until I saw this Rav Moshe. Moshe is introducing something dramatically new, which is there is a pool, and if you have extra, someone has less.
Where is the idea that everyone's created equal? That's not a Torah idea at all.
That's what I said to you before. Well, it's Rav Moshe, so it must be a Torah idea. I agree with you. I don't know Rav Moshe's premise for this. I don't know. I'm sharing it with you because I was blown away by it. Because I think even mitzad hashkafa, it's an incredible chiddush. It's an incredible chiddush. Now, it could be that what Rav Moshe is highlighting over here is almost like a perspective. You know, sometimes a person has to have a perspective. Lav dafka, that the perspective is unequivocal. I'm not about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, but this is how I should view myself. So Rav Moshe could be saying, if I have extra, then I have to view myself as if I have more, and that more came from someone else. For reasons that I don't understand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took more, a lot of that to me, and as a result, quote unquote, someone is left with less. Now, what is my responsibility? That means the more that I have has come from someone else. If the more that I have has come from someone else, then what? Then what? Then what? I'm sorry? I think Rav Moshe is talking about the way you view your possessions. It's not a question of what you ask for, right? I don't want my success to come on the heels of anyone else. Rav Moshe is saying b'metzias. Some have more, some have less, right? See, he's using the model in Eretz. So remember again, I want to point out the way he views Eretz Yisrael is a chiddush, right? Did anyone here ever think that Shevet Levi had a portion in Eretz Yisrael and they lost it? Did any of you ever think that way? Tell me if you did. I'm curious. I never thought that way because I don't think that's Pashat Pshat. I think Pashat Pshat is Shevet Levi never had a portion. They didn't lose anything. They never had a portion. You see, Rav Moshe is coming from this perspective. No, they had a portion. Every Shevet has a portion. They lost it. It was appropriated amongst others, and then others give back. Rav Moshe uses this as a model for the world. For the world. So again, I don't know that Rav Moshe is saying that this is how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. I think he's talking about how we view our excess.
So what is this to help you do?
Oh, I'll finish. I'll tell you. Good, tachlis, good, excellent. But I won't waste your time anymore, I promise we're going to get to it. So here we go. Sukkot Rav Moshe says, he says as follows, Ach, im yekayim hatunam shehisni imo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sheyitein stuka laniyim, shelaka chelkam. So therefore again, I have surplus. And the way Rav Moshe is viewing it is, my surplus came from where? Came from where?
Someone else.
From someone else. So how does that become mine? How does it become mine? By giving tzedakah. What you have only becomes yours when you go ahead and you give to someone else. Just like the other Shvatim. Tu B'Shvat is a Yom Tov. Why? Because that's the day when what? When what? When the land really became theirs. When does the land really become theirs? When they give their Trumas and Maisers to Shevet Levi. When does my money really become my money? When does my stuff become my stuff? When I go ahead and give tzedakah to others. It is only when I take from that which is mine and share it and use it to benefit others, that's the rent. That's the rent. That's when the apartment becomes mine. That's when my stuff really becomes mine. Ach machmas, shein lezetovim, efshar shiitchem elitin chelek hatzedakah meharevach. But remember again, just like Shumas and Maestros, what was the challenge of Shumas and Maestros? Although it's owed to Shevet Levi, there's no particular Levi who has the right to, or Kohen who has the right to show up at my house and demand it. With tzedakah also, I have an obligation to give tzedakah, but someone doesn't have a right to show up at my house and say, you know what, you owe me tzedakah. You have to give tzedakah instead of giving money. No one has the right to do that. So because there's no one to claim it, so to speak, it's possible that does efshar sheyitchem elitein chelek hatzedakah me'arevach sheyomar ulai lamachar yafsid olashana acheres yafsid. So same thing
that we spoke about with Trumas and Maisers could happen with Tzedakah. That what happens to me? One moment. That what could happen? What could happen? The same way that a person could delay giving Trumas and Maisers until when? Until when? Next year. And then you know what happens? The next year. Well, what about the next year? What about the next year? Until you get into a pattern of non-giving to the point that you don't even know what you owe, so you just give up on the whole thing. Tzedakah could happen the same way. A person will say, you know what, I'll give tzedakah when? When I'm comfortable. What's comfortable? So comfortable for me and comfortable for you might be two dramatic things. And when is a person really comfortable? And how much money is really comfort? Until a person just totally neglects giving tzedakah altogether. The Moshe says, what you learn from Meiser is that a person should delay no more than a year in dispersing their tzedakahs. That the same way that Tu B'Shvat ultimately again is the cutoff for Trumas and Maestros. This way again, you cannot delay giving your rent, paying your rent, because if you do, you'll just never end up paying it, and if you don't pay it, then the land you occupy is not really yours. So too, again, when it comes to tzedakah, the model we learn is don't hold on to your tzedakah monies for more than a year. Now again, there are exceptions of a person saving for some particular tzedakah project. I'm not talking about it. In general, what it means is disperse your tzedakahs. And what's the importance of going ahead? Every year, person should make a cheshbon, a calculation, how much tzedakah they own, and should give their portion of tzedakah. And if you make your cheshbon for your tzedakah every month or every week, even better. Right? Halavai, we should all be benched, right? That we should have money coming in every single day, and we have to make tzedakah cheshbonos every single day. V'zeh halimud yodin anu midin Tu B'Shvat shebazeh na'aseh hanisha shelanu. The message of Tu B'Shvat, says Rav Moshe, is that the land becomes yours when you pay your tithes. The message for us, v'yicholin anu lakish Hashem tilanu kol v'chinikim. The message for us is then what? When does your stuff really become yours? When does it become yours? When you pay your rent. When you give your tzedakah. When you disperse to the aniyim, recognizing that if I have more, that quote-unquote came from someone else, it only becomes mine when I utilize. Therefore, again, someone else's money is in my pocket. If someone else's money is in my pocket, then it's my obligation to what? To give it to them. How do I give it to them? Well, again, in agricultural society, through Trumas and Maestros. In general society, ultimately through tzedakah. And what you have only becomes yours when you choose to disperse it to the other who doesn't have. Question? Is that a question? Okay. Yes.
How does this work with the idea of what we usually learn, that like everything belongs to like Hashem, like people don't have to give tzedakah, like it's not our money.
So 100%. So I think... No, so I think your emotion is probably coming from the vantage point that conceptually, we know that everything is Hashem's. But practically and realistically, most people don't relate to their money like that. Right? Most people, when they relate to their money, say, of course, I understand, of course, it all comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but Lamaisa, it's mine. Meaning, it's mine in that I worked to earn it, and it's mine in that I have the choice to figure out how to spend it. Remember, even if it all belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I decide what goes where. So I think Rav Moshe works like that. All belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but Lamaisa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given it to me. Now it's mine to decide how to use it. The Yitzhara with tzedakah is to delay, because I never know if I'm going to have enough. Tu Bishvat teaches us, the land only becomes yours when you dispense your Trumas and Maestros. What you have in life really only becomes yours once you dispense. Now, remember, there is the concept, even if you believe that everything is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do things become ours at some point in time? They do. Remember, again, we have a Gemara like this. The Gemara says, Hashamayim Shamayim LaHashem Va'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam. The Gemara says, isn't the Adama also one to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The Gemara says, Kan Kodem Bracha, Kam LaAchar Bracha. Right? When you hold the apple in your hand before you make a berry praise, what does that apple belong to? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You make the bracha, who does it belong to? You. So there is this concept. What were we going to say?
No, like, I feel like it's a different, like, you. Like, I don't know if
but I feel
like
the one, but like
you can never take away something belongs to someone else. Like, I don't think like if they were competing for a job, like one person gets it, like you're not supposed to view it like she took away mine. Like,
right. But I think
that's for this, like if the person gave him the job, like now
it sounds
like she has to view it that she did take
the
break from another person,
which is not that she got something that could have gone to someone else, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to give it to her. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to give it to her, then she has an obligation to, quote-unquote, try to make other deficient people whole. Does that sound a little bit better? I want to be clear. This isn't... I'm sharing it with you because it is a dramatic chiddush, right? And because I think it is a dramatically different hashkafa. I think it's a different hashkafa. First of all, the notion of, if I have more, that means you have less, that's a dramatic hashkafic difference than the way we normally view the world. The way we normally view the world is you have what you need, I have what I need, and again, I am not pogea in what you have, you can't be pogea in what I have, we each have our own cheshbon, and that's it. You have your accounting, my accounting, we're not related. I mean, you don't understand, meaning we're not connected. My success has nothing to do with your success or lack thereof. And Rav Moshe says, yes, there is a certain level of interconnectedness. If I have more and you have less, I owe you. That's what Rav Moshe is saying. I owe you. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me more and gave you less, that's because, again, I owe you rent. And what I have only becomes mine when? When? After I pay you what, technically speaking, it sounds like what? You're entitled to. It also takes on, it also paints tzedakah in a different way. We look at tzedakah as chesed. Right? But ultimately, again, it turns out that tzedakah may very well be giving the other what? What the other is really technically entitled to. Instead of just a Kadosh Baruch Hu giving it to them, I'm the Shaliach Hashem to give it to them. Yes?
Who is it?
As opposed to what?
As opposed to health. Someone got healthy.
Yeah, because I think it has to apply to something that you can give to someone. So yeah, I don't think, you know, this person has children, this person doesn't have children. My extra child came at the expense of someone else. I think it's dafka things that I could control the flow of. So if you have more money and I have less money, you have the ability then to shape those circumstances by giving tzedakah. So I would venture to say it's dafka money.
So from this perspective, would it be like less valid to give tzedakah that's not going to poor people? Because if you're saying that you took from someone else, then you
did. Yeah, I hear it. I mean, you'd have to say no. You'd have to say, meaning, is it, the question was, based on this, is the highest level of tzedakah to give to aniyim, right? Versus, let's say, an organization. So the truth is, we know that in the Shulchan Aruch has Hilchos Tzedakah, right? And remember, again, Aniyim are the second most important, right? The first important is Torah, right? Tachzak is Torah, and then Aniyim. So Aniyim are up there, are definitely up there. And I would say definitely, like, support of Torah is support of everyone. But yes, what I would tell you is,
if, let's say, there is a choice between giving to the poor versus some other very nice cause, definitely supporting the poor takes precedence. I mean, that's not just for Moshe, that's the Shulchan Aruch. Right? That's actually the halacha, that you support poor people before anything else. I mean, together with Torah.
Stop giving to the poor people.
So look, this gets into a more complex, excellent question about hierarchy and tzedakah. This, you know, Baruch Hashem, thank God, there are more needs today than ever. There's also, Baruch Hashem, more affluence in the Jewish community than ever. And thank God, like, it's a wonderful shaila to have. Like, what do you give to? So it's a big discussion, because the truth is, if you just give to aniyim, then what happens, unfortunately, there's no end to aniyim, right? There's no end. So the truth is, very often it's a person-by-person shaila, depending on what a person is involved in, depending on where a person lives. So, for example, geography plays a very big role. Right, you're obligated to support the needs of your community before you're obligated to support the needs of another community. So what if, Baruch Hashem, there are no aniyim here, but there's aniyim somewhere else, but there's other tzurachim here? So this gets into more complicated shailas and hilchos tzedakah, but excellent question. Yes?
How should aniyim do this? Like, everyone took from them?
Yeah, it's an excellent, excellent question. I think the ani has to be, look, it's the same. It's easy to say if you're not the ani, but it's to view it as the same way the ashir realizes that he had been vested with a responsibility. So the ani has also been vested with a responsibility. I'll tell you something very beautiful. The Beis Halevi says, what is an ani like? He compares an ani to an esrog. It's actually very beautiful. So he says, what's the pshat? He says, you know, when you look at a tzedakah relationship, so you have the ashir and the ani, and the rich person is giving money to the ani. So everyone thinks, who's the tzaddik? Who's the tzaddik? The usher, right? It's the rich man that's giving the money. So the base lady says something very interesting. Absolutely, the usher is a tzaddik, no question. He says, but the ani becomes the cheftza shel mitzvah. It's actually an incredible idea. He says, the ani becomes the object through which someone else is able to grow. He says, just like your esrog is a cheftza shel mitzvah, it's an object of a mitzvah, your menorah, your sukkah, those are the things that enable growth. The ani becomes the cheftza. So how does the ani view it? I don't know, right? If you walk around thinking that, that guy's so successful, that's my money, he took it from me. First of all, no one took it. This is going back to the other idea that was raised. Remember, this is not the pshat that I'm doing something to take something from you. And that's where the Moshe is very clear. Remember his lashon was, "Ach kasher zocha me'ezetam ve'achad nischai me'ezetam nasan HaKadosh Baruch Hu." Remember again, these are part of the cheshbonos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I didn't do it. I never davened for my success to come at someone else's expense. Just the opposite. I don't want anything at anyone else's expense. Even if it means that I have less, I'd rather deal with less knowing that I'm not adversely impacting someone else than to have more and someone else to have less. But I don't run the world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does it. So how does the ani view it? I guess the ani has to view himself as that cheftza shel mitzvah. As difficult as his circumstances may be, he is the object which ultimately enables the growth of others. I don't know if that makes it easier for the ani. Halavai, none of us should know. But that's his tachlis. He's the vehicle of growth of someone else. But again, I want to be clear. None of these are cheshbonos that you and I are making. These are the cheshbonos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're looking at this ex post facto. Right? After the fact. I have more, Reuven has less. What does that mean for our relationship? So Rav Moshe just says, just know, you have more. The way I have to view it, I think Rav Moshe is talking about from our own personal hashkafic perspective. If I have more, in general, by the way, if you have more brachos than someone else, what does that tell you? Does it say that you're better?
No.
No, good, right? Excellent. Doesn't mean you're better. So what does it tell you? I'm sorry, more achrayus. That's the simple yisod here. If I have more, if I have an easier life, if I have less challenges, then by definition, I have greater achrayus. That's it. It doesn't mean I'm more important, less important, or what I have to accomplish. It means, thank God, if I have less turbulence, right, on the sea of my life, I have a greater level of responsibility. That's really all Rav Moshe is saying. So if I have more, you have less, then part of my achrayis is to give you, quote-unquote, what it is that you're entitled to. My gift of tzedakah to you is not just something nice that I'm doing, but mamish, it is something that, quote-unquote, you're entitled to, just instead of putting it in your pocket, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for some reason, put it in my pocket. And the rest of the stuff that is really mine only becomes mine, ultimately, once I give you what you are entitled to. It's just an incredible way. I know it probably need a little bit of time to digest it, but it's an incredible way just to view life. First of all, to recognize that if you have bracha, that bracha is a mechayiv to do for others. Right? Your brachos are not just there for you to enjoy. Your tranquility, your abundance, your blessing is not just there for you. Say, oh wow, lucky me. But rather again, every bracha is a mechayiv. Because if I have more, just by definition, it makes me acutely aware that what? Someone else has less. And my more only becomes mine. Only becomes mine when I use that bracha somehow to make the life of another a little bit better. Just like Tu Bishrat, the simcha is the land becomes mine because I've given Shevet Levi their rent. If I have more, my stuff that is really mine only remains and becomes and remains mine when I use it ultimately to go ahead and help and benefit the other. All right, we'll stop over here for today. Me'ez Hashem, Monday, we will continue with Tarek Shiva.
Question, is it possible that... There could be like almost a response.